You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the Brighton Rock Podcast, the podcast about the beautiful club within the beautiful game. With me, Russell Guyver, and I'm just me and my guest today, just two of us. It is the gent, Mr. Raymond Wright. Hello, Raymond. How are you?
Good afternoon, Russell. I'm fine. Sort of suffering a sense of disappointment and a bit of deja vu after last night, but
yes.
Otherwise,
fine. Okay, of course, about the Wolves game. We're going to be discussing that fairly soon, where we'll give our detailed analysis of what we think went wrong and anything that we thought went right, actually, as well. That's all coming up after we first heard from our men on the ground. Yes, our Manchester correspondents, or Greater Manchester correspondents, Nick and Alistair, were at the game. They were there. They did a little mini match day special for us, talking to another few familiar voices and giving us their opinions. So we're going to go to that first, and then you'll be back with us to hear our opinions after that.
So hello and welcome to the Match Day podcast. This is Alistair and Nick speaking from Manchester, although we've arrived in a little town called Wolverhampton, which you may have heard of, somewhere to the left of the Birmingham. And we're going to be doing a Match Day special today, and Russell's going to do a review as well, part two, with the gent Raymond. And we're going to be thinking a little bit about our forthcoming match. The other thing that's been happening today, everyone who's been able to has been buying their tickets for Roma as well. So maybe we'll just quickly start there and then move on. We're My Albion Plus members, and even though we've got lots and lots of points from going to lots of away games, I don't even think we're going to get a look in today with about 3,500 seats. A potential of 5,000, but apparently the police have been trying to keep the numbers down. But there's going to be people with travel booked. I think there's going to be a lot of people in the middle of Rome. It's going to be interesting. You and I, Nick, we'd both like to go, wouldn't we? But it's not going to happen, is it?
No, it's not going to happen. I don't think we'll get down to us anyway. I think the demand's going to be too high.
Yeah,
I mean, it's just frustrating that members don't get even a small allocation just to show willing, because people like us, we do travel around, don't we?
We certainly do, and have done since the 1890s or 1880s or whenever since 1901 we've been travelling. I do feel like it sometimes.
But we're not bitter, are we?
No, we're definitely not bitter. But having said that, if you're a season ticket holder and a faithful fan and you put the hard yards in, then I understand it's fair enough that you should be getting tickets. Anyway, we shall put that to one side. So obviously the big news for us is the awful news about injury to Mitoma and Welbeck. And I think, haven't you got a best 11 of injured players that we can go through? Who are they?
Well, if I go through what Andy Naylor has written on his injured... we've got nine.
For those of you that have already abandoned Twitter like me, who got so fed up with it.
But I can't believe how badly we've been affected by injuries, and we all thought it was all getting a lot better. And then you come to this game and you realise who we've lost. We've lost Mitoma, Ferguson, Welbeck, Veltman, Gilmore, João Pedro, Milner, Hinshelwood, and obviously March. I think everyone's forgotten we lost him
Yeah, well, he was out for the season at the beginning of the season, wasn't he?
That's pretty much a team. And
we're just lacking a goalkeeper and someone else to get injured. And now you've got 11 first-team players all injured.
And so and this is what worries me a lot, actually, because we've come to this game thinking, actually, we should be, you know, relative favourites, I would have thought. But now they've come back into form. They're right behind us in the league, aren't they? I think we're on the same points, goal difference. Yeah. And we've lost pretty much one. Well, Mitoma. I mean, when we went to see Sheffield, he was the difference, wasn't he?
Yeah. And well, him and Adingra. Yeah. They were amazing.
And it also, the pair of them made Ferguson start to look good again. I know Ferguson's not playing tonight, but all these injuries, it's just so frustrating.
Yeah. Sorry, I'm trying to remember now. Was Adingra available for Sheffield? I don't think he was.
He was.
What? Yeah. Do you know what? My mind is just gone.
Yeah. So I think that's the frustrating thing for us. This, you know, what I hope is this: our season doesn't grind to a halt because of these injuries.
Yeah.
Because you can just see us going out tonight because we aren't playing the strongest team we possibly could. And then we go into Europe and we've still not been able to play the strongest team we possibly could.
Yeah.
You know, it's this frustration that we have been hit relatively harder by this injury setbacks than pretty much any other team.
And Liverpool were complaining at the weekend about how many injuries they've got as well, and what a young team Liverpool had, when actually much as I really dislike them as a team, Chelsea actually had a younger team out than Liverpool did, but Liverpool were getting all the plaudits for having a young team out of the weekend as well.
But I don't think enough's been made of our injury crisis, setback, whatever way you want to describe it, because I mean, losing João Pedro now, was
he's a big loss.
I mean, you know, just as he hits form, he gets injured. And Tommy comes back, brilliant on the day he comes back, we lose him. You know, and it's so frustrating. That's what's, what worries me about tonight's game, is that we probably aren't the favourites for this one. I would put Wolves as favourites.
Yeah, I agree.
If we get a result here tonight, it'll be one of the results of the season. And I mean that. I mean, you know, if we can get through this round, I'd absolutely put us on for getting to the final, because this is going to be the hardest game, I think.
Because before kickoff, we're going to know who we're playing for a place to play against as well in the next round, aren't we? Because the draw's at 7 o'clock tonight, so we should know going into the ground. Well, we might already be in the ground by 7 o'clock, probably not. We'll know who it is that we should be playing. But it might all be by the by, really.
The other thing that's against us tonight is, you know, we're playing it on a Wednesday night. We're playing it on a night. It's terrible for the away fans to get to. We haven't sold out our away end or away side, whichever way you describe it.
Yeah.
So the actual support, although it would be great again, it won't be like it would have been if it had been played on a normal Saturday.
Reminds me of being back at Preston, and we're going to be cheering a black cat as it walks onto the pitch. And I suppose in the worst case scenario, that we could be doing that anyway.
Yeah, but I mean, they have put out a potential side that we could play, and you look at it, and obviously the goalie doesn't really matter because I think they're both as good as each other. Back line is pretty strong. Van Heck, Duncan Webster, probably.
Yeah.
I mean, Igor.
I think Igor was injured as well, wasn't he, at the weekend?
But I think he's all right. I think he's all right to play. So it's not a weak back line, is it?
No.
I mean, Webster's a bit iffy sometimes. Then you've got Lamptey, Gross, Belieber, and Adingra. Lamptey and Adingra up the wing. Possibly Buonotto and Lallana. And then Fatty. But there's no out-and-out striker there, is there?
No. So, no. I mean, you can see goals coming maybe from Adingra, not from Lamperty. I don't remember. And maybe Gross, Belieber, possibly, Buonate.
Yeah.
But, and then, of course, subs, you've got, I suppose, Estupian, Moda, Igor, if he is available. Whether or not Barco would be playing, I don't know if he would be on the bench or whatever.
I mean, if you did, I don't know if you watched the Blackburn game last night. There were two Brighton loanees playing,
right?
And they played really well for Blackburn.
Well, Van Heck got a lot of work when he was there, and actually, I've got a friend who's a season ticket holder there, and he really rated Van Heck, and then didn't hear of him for a season, and that was basically now he's fully back, isn't he? And this season doing really well for us.
Yeah. So I mean, if those young lads come on, O'Mahony, Baker, Boatti, if I pronounce that, Popion, this is their chance to shine if they have to come on, isn't it? And actually make a name for themselves. In his press conference yesterday, I don't think he's going to play Barco unless he really has to.
He keeps talking about how he's not ready yet, and it's a physical league, and there's a lot to prepare him for, and all those different things that, and sort of caveats that he looked. So, I mean, you were saying that Roberto Di Zerbi, he almost looked a bit deflated in the news conference.
My interpretation was he just looked fed up, and he just must be a kick in the nuts for him when he loses one of his best players.
Yeah. Well, you've got all your plans, and you're planning on playing around, and that's what you're working with. But then it all just goes to.
But he did say all the right things after that. He says, we're going to win, because we've got three big games coming up, haven't we?
Yeah. Well, a lot of our season could be decided in the next 3 weeks.
Yeah.
You've got Europe. You've got obviously our continued presence in the Premier League or not, whether or not we contend to go up to sixth or seventh, and then you've also got the FA Cup, which potentially, we could. It wouldn't be a million miles away for us to say we deserve to win that, or we could win that at any rate.
Yeah, I agree. This is crucial, and I think this game could just set the tone. If we win this, I keep going back to it, it will be one of the feats of the season. If we win this will be a great platform to moving on to going for that European spot. I mean, I think the game against Roma doesn't frighten me. I think we should, but winning this will be one of the biggest feats of our season, including getting the result at Rome.
Walking across that bridge in Rome, that frightens me. But obviously, hopefully, all of you travelling there, you all know about that. Do not walk across the bridge. Get the tram to the Vatican and walk from there, or however you're told that you're going. I imagine there'll be a lot of buses. But one way or another, we just need a result tonight, don't we? And if we get that by hook or by crook, I don't mind a messy 2-1 or however.
But no penalties, please don't put three
penalties. Oh, no, yeah.
We've not got a good track record with penalties.
Well, I don't know. I remember Adam Virgo and the glory, as we went into that semi-final.
I have never seen us live with a penalty shootout.
No, I was watching that on the telly, and that game we'd already given up on. But, anyway, that's a few eras ago.
Yeah, don't think our hearts could survive penalties tonight. But we've got to make our mind up about what curry we're going to have, because we're in the curry capital.
Yeah. So we're at Jack's Cafe Bar, which is just south of Wolves and just south of the town centre. And hopefully we're not going to get kicked out for having Brighton Hove Albion badges on our T-shirts.
Away fans in Wolverhampton in their bars, do they?
They don't like them anywhere in Birmingham. We had real issues in West Brom as well, didn't we?
We got kicked out in West Brom, didn't we?
Yeah. We'd already bought a pint as well.
This is why our voices have slightly gone down, because everyone's starting to listen to us.
Yeah. And the other thing, of course, everyone watched the marvellous display as I absolutely outclassed you for the first half of the pool match.
Yeah.
And then the second half of pool, you took it home and you potted that black last, didn't you? Yeah. I mean, first.
Yeah. It was a bit like a Brighton performance. A very slow start, but finished well.
That's it, yeah. And you got the result you needed. And actually that you deserve, because I really did screw up at the end there. I think at one point there was one yellow on the table and about six reds. But you've managed to get all of those reds. Anyway, let's hope that the yellows do very badly today.
Yeah.
And let's hope that Brighton do well. Anyway, we've got some other friends coming joining us later. We'll keep you informed as we go along. And,
do a bit of in-match analysis as well, hopefully.
Yeah, excellent. Talk to you soon. So, Jack's Cafe is filling up now and food is being served. And I'm very, very fortunate to have Ahmed and Alison with me. Ahmed, how are you doing? The last time we met was in Sheffield, and you were at the Sheffield game. So, how are you doing?
No, I'm doing well. Hopefully I can stay awake for this game.
Yeah, you didn't fall asleep because of the match. More of a medical thing. But are you looking forward to tonight?
I am definitely looking forward to it, even though we don't have a very strong team.
Yeah, bit of an issue that, isn't
it?
Yeah.
So let's see what we can grab out of this game, but...
Are you feeling hopeful? A man of hope. You are. You look to me as someone who is a hopeful person.
Yeah, I'm optimistic, but let's hope we can scrape through. Even if you have to take it to penalties or something, be really good.
We were just saying actually, penalties is the one thing that we're not quite sure any of our hearts could actually survive that.
No, but luckily we haven't got Solly March to take them.
Yeah. Well, poor Solly. I did hear actually that lunar lander that landed on Moon the other day actually caught a picture of that ball that was kicked at Wembley by Solly. But yeah. And Alison, how are you feeling about today? Obviously, last time we met is also Sheffield too.
Yes, well, I saw a little bit more of the game, but not much than Ahmed. I saw the first two goals at least. So at least that was a good result. I suppose it all depends about... I find it a slight strange thing that they're now doing the draw ahead of the game. Because it makes you feel, you know, there's a big difference. If you know that we've got, say, Man City away in the next round, it makes it less of a prize to play for than... Is it Coventry? Are they through? So
yeah, Coventry are through. They beat Maidstone last night, didn't they?
Yeah, so if it's Coventry at home, it's rather more of a prize than if it's Man City away. I find it odd that they do the draw more for TV these days than actually what would be, you know, in the interests of the competition, really.
Sound
I feel
like
sound like my dad, but
yeah. So what do you reckon about tonight? Do you reckon the same as Ahmed? Do you think we'll scrape through?
I think it's going to be very tough, it could well go to extra time and penalties, and a bit like we witnessed last night at Ewood Park. So not quite sure, but it could be a late night as well as a wet night.
Yeah, fortunately, you haven't caught a train, so you've not got a last train that you have to go for. You've driven here, haven't you?
Yeah, we've got a half day tomorrow, so the option to stay somewhere on the way home, just in case.
Brilliant. Well done for getting here, and we'll maybe catch up with you a bit later as well. So the last time we were talking, Andy Wedgie, who is a good friend of the podcast, we managed to bring home 3 points from Sheffield in the FA Cup, which means that we're playing here tonight in Wolves. So, what's your feeling about tonight, and how are you feeling about everything?
Well,
have you brought your boots?
I have brought my boots. I'm hoping I've just received a text message from BHAFC.
Yep.
And I honestly thought it was the kit man saying, Wedgie, have you brought your boots? But it wasn't. It was just BHAFC saying, your window is now open for a Roma ticket. So, but I do have my boots, yeah.
And do you have your ticket?
I do have my ticket.
Do you have your travel and accommodation?
We're all off to Rome. Courts has worked an absolute blinder.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of us off to Rome Wednesday to Friday next week. Very excitable. But for tonight, I think, do you know what? Genuinely, it's going to be very, very tough. The only factor that's in our favour is that Wolves might have some miles in their legs because they only played a couple of days ago. But other than that, I think we are now so threadbare. We've worn it for months, since about November, and we've gone through layers and layers and layers of junior contingency. But to end up at this point with only one really comfortable, genuine midfielder, only one winger, and no strikers. And we might not even be able to name 19 players this evening. I don't honestly think we will. We might only name 16 people in a game we're allowed to have 19.
So there could be a number of players with a squad number higher than 50 on their back, couldn't there?
I'd love to consider, let's have a bet for tonight. The average shirt number on the bench could well exceed 40 tonight, which is something. But, you know, we're here, we're in high spirits, we're excited about it. We're just desperate to just kind of squeak through with the added excitement of knowing who we might be playing next before the game even kicks off. So we found a cracking little bar just on the south side of Wolverhampton. It's doing some great ales and some Indian food. And it's wonderful. And the atmosphere is building.
Excellent. So thanks very much, Andy. We'll come back to you later. And in the meantime, we'll allow you to enjoy your own food and some mood music. Yeah, I think, is it Nick's round?
I won the pool, fella.
He did win the pool. I had to buy the round. So it's half time. We've just gone back into the concourse. Oh, and that half was decided by what happened in the first minute and a half with Steele kind of just making a bit of a blunder, really. And then, of course, everyone around us started saying, why do we keep swapping keepers and why do we keep doing that?
But then actually we played really well. I thought Igor's playing pretty good. As he's done a lot of saves. There was one little bit there from Pepignol towards the end there where he managed to get the ball as it was going towards Steele. But yeah, it's a half where we looked really good apart from the first 2 minutes.
I mean, how often have we seen that watching Brighton, us shoot ourselves in the foot?
Yeah.
In the first bloody minute. In the first minute. I mean, it looked like a Steele blunder, obviously. But it looked like, I thought we should have cleared it even after he dropped it. We still didn't clear it.
No, we could have cleared it better, yeah.
It looked like we should have cleared it. But like you say, but Igor, you know, on the positive side, we've looked all right since then, haven't we? We've made plenty of chances.
I think we've had four or five clear chances that really some should have been on the end of, or they should have been more on target.
Yeah. I think we'll wait and see what the telly looks like. But I think but what I'd like to say is poor old Poupillon on that right wing. He's completely isolated, isn't he? Not being passed to, nothing.
No, it's almost like you're not one of our gangs, so we're not going to pass you. Like, they've not played with him before. They don't trust him, or they're not used to plousing to him, and they don't have confidence that he's going to take it up if they send it his way anyway.
I know, I just feel so sorry for him. He's waving and wagging his hands. You can see him in the far corner. They're all ignoring him. So, let's fingers crossed he gets the ball and he blasts one into the top right hand corner or something. But
I really feel for him. It's a bit like when I used to play football and I was the last one to get picked with my back against the wall in the sports hall.
Yeah, it's like that, isn't it? But Igor has been immense in this half.
Yeah.
Absolutely immense.
And Buonate's looked good going forward. In fact, he's got a few through Estupiñán. He's looked okay as well, hasn't he?
Yeah, it's all come from this left-hand side, hasn't it?
Yeah.
And like I say, if it hadn't been for the blunder, I think, you know, well, I'd love to know the stats, but we must have 60, 70% of them possession.
I'll have to try and get hold. It's hard getting mobile signal, obviously, in a stadium, but we'll have a look.
Yeah, that is. But, no, fingers crossed we don't do shoot ourselves in the foot again early in the second half. We can come back into this. I feel positive.
If only we can just have a goal scorer or someone who can put it in the net. That's the problem, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean that header, it looked like that was a clear opportunity, that header. Again, we're not in a good view, are we? We haven't got the greatest view from our side on.
And you forgot your glasses as well, Nick.
I forgot my glasses, so it's all a bit of a blur. But yeah, apart from that, no.
I think the one shot that was absolutely on target that I remember was Pepillon's. That was just a really lame tap. That was either, it wasn't a cross and it wasn't a shot.
Yeah, which may show a bit of nerves, may show a bit of confidence, rabbit caught in the headlights. But yeah, look, let's be positive. It could have gone all very, very pear-shaped for that first 5 minutes. We've come back. We're looking reasonably confident on the ball, just need to knock it in the back of the bloody net. Take a shot sometimes as well.
Yeah. Attack being the best form of defence in that sense, isn't it?
Not play that extra pass. They always do that, don't they?
Or give them the time to regroup and everything before we then get back onto it. They've been very slow at taking the ball, taking kicks and throw-ins and everything. Now that they're a goal up, they're sitting on that, aren't they?
Yeah, and maybe that's a good thing I've said to you.
Yeah, that's hopeful for me because it looks like they're just basically defending that 1-0 lead.
Yeah, and if they drop deeper and deeper, and I said to you before, you can score too early in a match sometimes.
Yeah.
And maybe that's, hopefully that's the thing we can hold on to as well.
Yeah, and other clichés.
Yeah.
Excellent. Well, we'll catch up with you sometime in the second half. So it's 85 minutes played of normal time. We're still 1-0 down. We've watched the debut of Barco, and we haven't really looked like scoring all night, have we? It's just been so frustrating. A frustrating night.
And they got a corner now, haven't they, as well?
And now their crowd have made a good atmosphere going around the ground. It just feels like it's only going to go one way, really.
We've been trying to score this wonder goal by threading it through the eye of a needle. It just hasn't worked. So, they deserve this because they've just defended so well. Anyway.
Every time we've had the ball, they've been back two rows of four and five, and they've got their third corner of the night. I think we've had plenty. Oh, and are they going to score? First time Steele actually grabs it in his hands, and it's the 87th minute almost, yeah.
Yeah, first save of the night, isn't it? So it's been down this end all day, hasn't it?
This second half, we've been all over them, but no final product. Every shot has been blocked or just hasn't even made anything of it.
Hang on.
Oh, there was a shot there.
Right. It's going to be a bit frantic now, isn't it?
It is. It's going to be really hectic. Well, we'll see how it goes. Hopefully, we'll be in a very different mood in a few minutes. Albion! 4 seconds to go. We've got a corner. Oh, my life.
It can go in off his arse for all I care. It's got to go in.
They've just been defending for basically 88 minutes. Here we go, and... Oh, that's it. That's the last chance. Just goes right to the right of the goal. And that's it. Goal kick, which of course the keeper will take about 3 minutes to take. And the final whistle's going to be blown. That's it. Well, no Wembley this year. I'm afraid this is all Wolves fans you can hear right now. Absolute bugger. That's all I can say. We knew it was coming. We didn't really have high hopes of tonight. But losing 1-0 against a team that the minute they went, well, 1.5 minutes in, they went 1-0 up, and then they defended for the rest of the match.
Heard it with their fans, didn't they?
So. Yeah, we were just walking back to the car, and all their fans were saying, oh, the last two games we were 1-0 up, and then just said, fuck it. And let's just defend for the next 30 minutes, no, 88 and a half minutes, or however long they had left. Oh, it's just one of those infuriating matches. And, I suppose... it's a shame, like we're all kind of saying right at the start, who is this guy at the end? Is his name Papillon? Is he a butterfly? Poupignon? And it seemed that all of the other players on the pitch thought the same as well for the first half, because no one passed to him, and it seemed to be that he got subbed off at half time. He got done for the first goal, apparently. I didn't notice that, and we haven't seen any replays yet. We're literally just driving away from the ground now. Oh, and it's just infuriating, and we don't even want to have the radio on because we don't want to hear gloating Wolves fans, and we don't want to hear moaning Brighton fans, and now we're about to have a moan, aren't we, Nick?
Yeah, well, all I can say is we beat ourselves in that game, and we had, I know it wasn't 80%, but it felt like 80% of the possession, but we just threw it away. I literally threw it away in the first half, didn't we?
Well, still super throw it away, and again, this will open up the debate. Should we be rotating keepers in the way that we do? Are we just shooting ourselves in the foot every time we do that? And Steele definitely looked incredibly nervous in that first half. He seemed to look a bit better in the second half. There was a couple of good gets that he got.
But he didn't have to do anything, did he, second half? He just was a spectator. I mean, he maybe had one shot to save.
They hardly attacked in the second half. There were one or two little bursts that they had, but we seemed to shut them down most of the time then. So many chances as well that we had, but we just didn't make any of them stick, and we just did not look like scoring at any point tonight.
Right, and it was, they looked to try to score this usual wonder goal that we can never score, where we try and walk into the back of the net. It's like, it feels like that's been Brighton's style since the 70s, where we try and walk into the net and we never do.
Well, since Potter anyway.
Well, no, I just feel it's like we've always been like that.
It's a bit of a tricky right turn here, going round the roundabout here. Yeah. So you do appreciate. I'm the one who is holding the phone today, and Nick's our chauffeur tonight.
Yeah. Let's take a step back and think about it. We were hugely lacking in firepower tonight.
Yeah. And we were able to bring Welbeck on, and we didn't know that he was even fit, did we? So the fact that he came on for the second half, I suppose we take that as a bonus, but I must admit, I forgot he was on the pitch in that second half.
Yeah, Igor was superb in that first half.
Yeah, and he got taken off early, so I imagine that must be because of just protecting him and his injury and stuff.
I guess so.
I think you can take that lane.
Can I? Okay. Yeah. When Nsisco came on, he was good.
Yeah, and Nsisco came on and he seemed to liven things up in the last 10 minutes or so, helped to create a little bit.
Yeah, he looked all right. Oh, what's this fella doing here? Sorry.
Yeah, just being a Wolves fan, yeah.
Yeah, so I there were some definitely some positives, and I think the fact was we threw it away in the first minute, and after that we dominated possession, just couldn't score, and I just feel like, you know, it did, like you say, it did feel a bit Potter-esque to me.
Yeah, and it's always notable as well that the fans start leaving early, and the players don't even come across to the touchline to say thank you to the fans and their support. Because even though we didn't sell out that away end, there was still an awful lot of us that travelled. And we might not have made as much noise tonight because we were just spread thinly in a thin strip along there. But a really frustrating night, I suppose. Again, one positive that we said, that means now, of course, we're now able to fully focus on the Premier League and Europe.
Europe, yeah, we've got to go to Rome now. And, you know, what were we saying? At half-time, we're speaking to Andy, and he was basically saying, you know, is this the team that's going to win in Rome? But I don't think they're going to play that team in Rome, are they?
No, not in a million years are they going to start that team in Rome.
So I'm assuming there'll be a lot stronger lineup, and hopefully they'll actually decide to take a shot, deign to take a shot, as opposed to try and arse about with it like for 20 minutes.
Although, to be fair to the Wolves players and obviously the way that they were set up, as soon as they went a goal up, it was all about wasting time and defending with 10 men in the box. And they did that really effectively. And we gave them the time to get back a lot of the time as well.
Yeah, we turned back on ourselves, played it back into the midfield, and then we tried to thread it through midfield. There were passes on for a Dringer, which you and I could see.
Yeah.
And they were trying wonder balls across to the other wing, and you're going like, what are you doing? And it was going flying out, wasn't it, at one point? And you're going like, why are you doing that?
Yeah.
So anyway, like you say, frustrating night, but not all bad. It was, you know, there were bits there that were good.
And the good news is, for the majority of you listening to this podcast, we did this tonight for you so that you could listen to our frustration, and you probably had a nice cosy night in at home watching Netflix or having a curry or a night in front of the fire with the missus. So you're very welcome. Our service to you is as served. And now we're going to hand back to Russell and to the gent Raymond, who are going to give us their feelings and thoughts on the match, and we'll take it from there. But it's goodbye from me.
And it's goodbye from me.
Stand or fall.
Up the Albion.
So there we go. Thank you very much to Alistair for doing his classic Northern away day, match day special subbing in routine for us. Much appreciated as always. And also to his companion, our good friend Nick as well. Raymond, I mean, we've heard their opinions now. Obviously, disappointment, frustration was a word that came up there. And the word bugger at the end, which I think pretty much sums it up. Frustrating, not least because before the match, we got the perfect draw, literally, and by some distance, the best draw we could have on paper, which was at home to Coventry, should we get through. So doubly frustrating to miss out when I felt that we could get at least a third semi-final campaign underway here and maybe further. That's disappointing, of course. But what did you make of it all? We were watching at home, weren't we, on our TV screens. Your thoughts on it overall?
Well, the first thing I have to say is that with the Seagulls Over London crowd, I went up to try and field people at the Duke of Sussex pub, not named after the current Duke of Sussex, by the way. And unfortunately, there was nobody else there. We went with an iPad to link, but we couldn't use the iPad to link in because it was on BBC iPlayer. So we waited till just before 7:25 rather, and we left. So the result was I got in and got the TV on, started watching the match from the 7th minute, by which time we were 1-0 down. It obviously wasn't exactly good news, but as Chris Jonas said, it was probably a good thing to miss. Unfortunately, that didn't mean to say that the score changed just because I'd missed it. Sadly, because if that hadn't counted because I'd seen it, then it would have been nil all. So that was a great shame. And a cute observation, but not a useful one, from Chris Jonas. Having said that, I didn't know what a sort of horlicks of accidents and mistakes it was that led to that goal. Obviously, the Wolves player slipped, Van Heck, who slipped. And the surface seemed to be quite slippery because I noticed players on both sides were losing their feet.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure that that's helpful. And obviously Van Hecht slipped a bit there. But nonetheless, when the ball came across, having seen it after the match, I could see that Steele definitely should have done better. He either should have punched it, caught it, or arguably left it alone. If he'd left it alone, I don't think the player would have got it. But he did a really good assist down to the Wolves player by sort of palming it sort of rather ineffectively. And then he seemed to somehow miss the ball when it came sort of past him. And it looked as if he should have had an opportunity of saving it. That was much harder to see. So Wolves then just simply sat back. I'm not saying they didn't pressurize us with three or four players further forward, but they actually got back very quickly. They weren't slow to foul us, either just in our half or around the halfway line, so they could reset. And in the first half alone, they gave away 10 free kicks to our four. And that, in a sense, sums it up. We ended up with 72% possession in the whole game, 69% first half, so obviously around 75% second half. So they did what they had done at the Amex, which was sort of very disciplined, controlled defending, don't give much away, don't dive in stupidly. I think perhaps we were once or twice slightly overambitious trying to do little passes through the wall of defenders. Having said that, we did have 18 shots all told. The bad statistic was we only on target twice. We had six block shots, so it's difficult to know that those would have been on target as well. So it was that ineffectiveness in terms of the end product, not for lack of creating the chances. We had 18 shots. There were a number of good chances. The Buonanotte one, when Van Hecht went near post and the ball came across, and it came to him quickly, but the header just passed.
Yeah.
There was one from Adringa, which he missed. There was one where Adringa sort of put it back rather than actually shooting in the second half. Dunk got a header. If he just moved back rather than staying where he was to head it, moved back a pace, then he would have been able to get on top of it. And he had plenty of time to do that. Moda had a good attempt, a good move. The whole way his body language and shape was right for the shot. He just put it to the left of the post from his angle. So there were a lot of chances, not necessarily easy ones, but three or four, I thought, ones that on another day we probably would have scored from. We missed Gilmore in the middle of the field. Not that Motta played badly for the hour or so he was on. I thought actually he looked, first time I've seen him look back closer to what he used to be before his injury.
Yeah.
I still think we're missing Pedro. It made a difference when we got Welbeck on for the second half. And Roberto felt he could only get a half out of him. And that was probably sort of pushing his luck a bit. But Fatty is clearly not a centre forward. And it just, you know, unless you have the other players who can play with a false number nine around somebody like that, it ain't going to work. It just sometimes just moves the ball too slowly. I mean, still, I think sometimes when he's passing it out, he doesn't put enough pace on the ball. And there were several occasions when there would be two players on whichever flank, right or left, who would be in plenty of space, and he'd hit it out there. But the slowness of the pass, the problem when it left his foot to reach the player, so slow that the Wolves players were able to get back the right side of the ball. And therefore, the opportunity of exploiting the space that was potentially there had gone. And as I can't remember who it was who pointed out, but on Sol today, that what Schmeichel used to do at Manchester United was to get the ball and run to the front and throw it out quickly. And if Steele was doing some quick throws, it just might have been able to get him behind them. We didn't do any, on the official stats, there were no counter-attacks by Brighton.
Yeah, well, I think interesting points there, and I think that last one in particular. I think the reason we didn't get many counterattacks is because Wolves are a very clever team. I really like them. I think they're an excellent side. It's not the most exciting to watch, but they are rock solid in defence, incredibly good defenders. So you really don't want to give them a bonus right at the beginning of the game, as we did. Whereas in the home game in the Amex, of course, same scenario, but it just led to a draw, of course, because neither team was given the chance like that. But in this game, rock solid at the back, dangerous on the counter-attack, particularly in the second half, and particularly when Neto came on, who I've rated as an extremely good player and very dangerous. And he did get away once, and luckily we covered it in defence in the end by Igor, I think it was, who had a really good game. Other than that, well,
That piece of defending by Igor was outstanding. He had the pace to keep up with Neto.
Yeah.
B, he didn't lunge in and do a silly tackle.
Yeah.
And give away a
ground
or a free kick just outside the area. And C, he ended up blocking the shot.
Yes. Yeah.
The three things he had to do, all of which he did and did well.
Yeah. And I totally agree with you 100%. But the way they counterattack, such as that incident, is curious, because they don't counterattack in big numbers, not very often. So they don't overload themselves. They don't overstretch themselves, and leave the risk of a counterattack. So I think if we were going to have counterattacks, it was going to be in counterance to their counterattacks, because they were sitting deep pretty much the whole way through the game. If you look at the territorial stats, if you look at the overall possession stats, 72% we had, you know, the number of shots, the number of fouls we won, the number of corners we won. It's just it tells you they're very clever with how they counterattack. They're dangerous in small numbers coming forward. They don't, as I said, they don't overload and leave themselves exposed, which I think is part of the key to why Gary O'Neill's got them playing so well. They've lost four of their key players. And then he's come in after the pre-season, just after the season started. Total disaster scenario. I think he's manager of the season so far, coach of the season. Other people you could argue, but I think he's top of that, because he didn't have the pre-season. The key players have been lost from the team, and he's managed to get them into a position where they're striking distance away from European places. They're just in behind us now. I have to say they've been lucky with injuries. They only had Cunha injured in the run-up to this game. I know Hwang went off injured, and that might be quite serious, but they haven't really had an awful lot of injuries, which is a mixture of luck, and it's also a mixture of circumstance, because obviously they haven't had a European campaign, which we've had, so they've had less games, which will have been one of the factors involved. But then they've probably got a smaller squad, I think, in terms of what they would call first-team squad. So, they've probably been a bit lucky in that regard. But notwithstanding that, I think he's done a brilliant job. This was always going to be a low-scoring game. We couldn't afford to make that mistake at the beginning. We know how they're set up. I do agree with you about the point about Steele. He could have got slightly more snap on his passes, the long rangers, and possibly could have thrown it out more. But I do think when you look at our possession in that game, we look really slick. We look a really good team. Champions League standard in terms of our passing in tight spaces and some really awkward areas. We keep our cool. We don't tend to make many mistakes at all. I know we made one right at the beginning, but we don't tend to overall. And we looked a really good team, and we gave Wolves a lot of problems. They had to work very, very hard. But ultimately, the problem is we were dealing with another team with a low block, albeit a much better quality one than some of the others we faced. But they're equally good in defence. Just more dangerous in attack than some of the other teams. And we don't quite move the ball forward quickly enough in that final segment. What I think the main problem is, it's very hard to do successfully, but the main problem I think with yesterday's game was that, first of all, there were some really aimless balls put forward, particularly in the very last stages, where we just a move petered out with an aimless ball forwards, which was uncharacteristic of us. And the other problem, which wasn't so much in this game, but has been a problem until this game, we have lacked those sort of really talented players that could unlock defences. We've got back, and Barco came in, and I thought they both looked excellent. And if they'd been able to be on for longer, I say able because I'm presuming they didn't want to be risked for longer for whatever reason. But if they come on sooner, even 10 minutes sooner, we may have just snatched a result there and taken it to extra time. I think Barco looks really dangerous. He looks nippy. He looks tricky. He's got a really good first touch and he's got a wicked ball in with his left foot, which was causing problems. Even his very first ball in, which was second, third touch, caused him a problem. We got a fairly dangerous header somewhere near the target. And Ciso, we just know he's got that spring. And just when it looks like he's going to lose the ball, he keeps hold of it, which draws a defender in and then creates a bit of space. He was starting to open them up, but we just didn't have enough for long enough, which is a shame. The other point as well, just to go before I go back to you, Raymond, is obviously we've suffered injuries a lot this season. A lot of our effective play was Enciso. He's been missing all season. Mittem has been missing for various patches of this season and is now, sadly, seems out for the rest of the campaign, which is infuriating and frustrating. But we haven't had him and Estupiñán both match fit and both match sharp all season. And that's a big miss as well. And obviously Solly March on the other side, plus Adingra for a few weeks as well with the injury / AFCON duty. Key players in key areas, and even with Evan Ferguson, who it seems had, I think there's talk he might have had glandular fever. He's certainly not been right, either whether it's illness, injury, or a mixture of the two. He hasn't been firing on all cylinders. Yet we're still top half of the table. We were still very close to forcing that game into, it could have ended up in penalties very easily. It was always going to be a close game. And we could very easily have ended up in the semi-final of this competition. We still are in the Europa League at the moment. We're still in the top half of the table, despite all of that, which I think is something to be proud of. I thought it was quite a good game yesterday. It was quite interesting. But from a Brighton point of view, obviously, in the end, it was just frustrating because we couldn't break them down.
Coming back to the Brighton performances and comparing Wolves and Everton, against Everton, we actually had 90% passing accuracy. Every now and again, we dip below. But we tend to be 88, 89, 90. Against Sheffield United, we were 94%. One or two games, we've been 92, 93%. Our passing accuracy is, I think, second only behind Manchester City in the Premier League. But I think, actually, we're up in the top. We're arguably probably up in the top seven or eight in Europe. And so that is something good. And funnily enough, last night we were slightly less accurate than we had been against Everton. It's the point you make about the attacking players. We haven't had pace earlier in the season. We had both Adingra and/or March and/or Mitoma. And I think the March injury is actually sort of coming back to bite us because we haven't, when they were both fit, we didn't get the chance to actually rest them or put them on the bench and keep them fresh. So we were having to play them both the time. And when they, I think, Mitoma, I think, might have had a slight niggle before he got the main injury. And because we needed to use him and to create Roberto, an important player for us, it made a difference. Whereas he could have moved Adingra onto the left, had March on the right, and he could have rested Mitoma for a game, and that might have made a difference. And I think the fact that we've had to use a lot of the same players may have been contributing, rather than giving them a rest or only bringing them off the bench for a bit, might have led to some of the injuries. I noticed that he's saying he's hoping that people like Veltman and Ferguson and Lamptey might be back for Saturday's game against Fulham. Pedro and Milner, he's still saying 2 to 3 weeks for now, so that's probably 3 weeks. The good news, if I can call it good news, about the Wolves thing is that we're not actually got a fixture on the weekend of the 16th, 17th, the Manchester City fixture having been postponed.
And City that means to win, yeah.
Yeah. And therefore, after the match against Nottingham Forest, we're actually going to have a 3-week break.
Yeah.
And that gives, some of the players might go off on international duty, but actually it does give by a bit more time for some of the players to come back to fitness. And I suspect that, from what he's saying, Pedro and Milner aren't going to be fit by the time we play that Nottingham Forest game. So hopefully they'll both be back by the time we come back from it and we're playing Liverpool on Easter Sunday.
Gilmore would have used up his suspension by then after the Forest game, won't he, as well?
But also one wonders whether the fact that Gilmore hasn't been able to be rested, really, whether his timing on the tackle, which led to the red card, if he was that just a little bit less tired, might have actually, he might have got to the ball quicker or not done the tackle. And therefore, are those sort of mistakes, a matter of split-second timing, leading to a red card or not leading to it, happened as a result of the same people having to play the whole time?
Yeah, probably right. Alternative
to bring on after 65 minutes to rest them.
Yeah.
And Gross looked as if he was sort of struggling by then to cramp or something towards the end of the game last night. And we certainly can't afford to lose Gross for a period of time. So I just wonder if things... And I say the silver lining in losing to Wolves, apart from that, it is that perhaps it's going to be easier to focus on two competitions.
Mm. Yeah, possibly so. And, I agree with you on that. In terms of your points there, I think with the Gilmore thing about the timing, if he was maybe a bit fatigued. Also, I think there's probably some truth in that. But also other players will, for similar reasons, would get injuries because they'll either miss time tackles or pull out of tackles. And, you know, it's a knock-on effect, isn't it? If you're carrying niggling injuries, if you're fatigued, whatever it is that's going on, that you're not 100%, and then you've got to play because other people are injured, it becomes more and more of it's a vicious circle, essentially, isn't it? Unless you can break out of that, you have the problem. So I'm pretty pleased that we have got at least some time free, as you said, after these next two fixtures, in terms of the league campaign. Obviously, we've got the Europa League still going on. But the good thing is, Billy will at least have a week or week and a half's rest going into the first of those fixtures in Rome. And he'll also get then the same rest everyone else will after the second of those fixtures. Whereas you said we've got the 2 week gap or whatever it is, 2 or 3 weeks. So yeah, if we can get some players rested, if we can get some players recuperated and rehabilitated from injuries, that would be great. I do think we've done well, all things considered. We have been a bit unlucky with some of those injuries. You can argue that maybe we could have had even more greater depth in the squad to cover certain areas at certain times. But in terms of the Wolves game, just the lineup, Steele was in goal again for this one, as we know, because part of the mistake for their goal. Van Hecker, Duncan, Igor as the back three. It was pretty much a 3-4-3, wasn't it? With Poupillon playing as a right-sided sort of midfielder / wing-back, Estupiñán doing the other thing on the left side, Modder and Grosch in the middle. And then up front, we've got, well, Buenanotte, Adingra and Fatty, as you said, Fatty playing seemingly as a centre-forward. I think it was more about the replacements. We've already mentioned some of it, of course, already so far. Welbeck coming on at half-time for Poupillon. I felt he was struggling, really. It was a mixture of finding his feet in the game and maybe not getting much of a supply line from his teammates, which I suppose comes...
Are you talking about Welbeck?
Yeah. Well, Poupillon coming off, I'm talking about. Yeah. But Welbeck, of course, replaced him. Belaba came on 61 for Modder, and then Baker Boate came on 70 minutes, along with Enciso for Buenanotte and Fatty, respectively. Barco didn't come on to the 80th minute for Igor as we tried to push forward, which is a bit disappointing, actually, because I did feel as if we could have done with him for another 10 minutes. But anyway, what did you make of Poupillon? Do you think that was a case of he wasn't really given much of a connection with the team in this one? He's come back from a loan where he wasn't getting game time at Cheltenham in League One, so it's a bit of an odd one to come into the Premier League for an FA Cup match.
I don't think he did anything wrong, but I don't think he had anything. I just think I think Roberto has probably said just keep it simple, give things. He was occupying another space, somebody had to mark him, and to that extent they obviously thought that Welbeck could only do a half, as I said earlier. And I think that it's, that Perpignan was only ever going to get 45 minutes. So he bought the time that Welbeck needed. And more sense Welbeck coming on, when the space might be opening up more as players got tireder in the second half. So I can understand the strategy. I think there were probably no other options. I might have tried Omani at centre forward. The youngster's been scored quite a lot of goals in the under-21s. Mm. He's a sort of proper number nine. And then I would have probably had Adringa and Fatty out wide, which is effectively what we did after we brought Welbeck on. For Perpignan or so. But I think and I still might have brought Welbeck on at half time. But I've got the benefit of hindsight, and I'm sitting in a comfy chair at home watching it. So not having to second guess what's going to happen, I'm reacting to what is happening. So Roberto has to try and look into the future. And obviously it felt that Perpignan did make a couple of appearances off the bench towards the end of last season, had been there before, and perhaps was a better option. And having had a few games albeit not successfully, as you say, at Cheltenham, than in a poor Cheltenham side at the time, they're playing better now. It was a better bet. So he wasn't going to be phased or overawed by the occasion. So I can understand it. But our lack of depth, I think, is the thing. Yes, we could have potentially strengthened in the winter. We were looking to get, we understand, Dewsbury Hall from Leicester. The valuations of the two clubs were miles apart, so that wasn't going to happen. We, I think, considered Gil on loan from Spurs, the Spanish player, who I think would have been helpful in giving us another wide player who could play number 10. We're short of a central midfielder, having decided to let Dahoud go on loan. And that makes sense. Dahoud obviously hadn't settled.
Which is a shame, because that would have sold it. If he was the right option, then that personnel's fine. So it's a bit of bad luck. We can't tell how people are going to be, but it's just unfortunate he didn't settle, really. It didn't seem to be his thing. Yeah.
And I noticed he's been getting a bit of game time over in Germany, and actually scored a goal the other day. So, he's probably more suited to that sort of league than it is here. And, I mean, arguably, we're short of a fullback one way or the other. We're short of a defensive midfielder. And we're short of another forward who can play number nine or out wide. And it's that we're that close to being a very good team. And if you look at all the draws we've had in the league, I think that's the most telling statistic. That actually, if we'd sort of just won, say, four of those draws, another 8 points would put us up above Manchester United and knocking on the edge of fifth place. So it is that. It's just taking us that small step further forward. And if we recruit well in the summer, then we can do well. But we still need to, that's why I think going down to two competitions might be better, because we really want to try and qualify as of right in the league. And if we can get the bonus of going much further in the Europa League, then so much the better. But it is our first experience ever of Europe. We've never had the experience of doing it. And circumstances are certainly injury-wise conferred against us. But the question I would ask, and I was asking the other night with some of the Sol members, is, is it the lengthy bar investigations? Is it the extra minutes that everybody's playing? Why is everybody, not just the Albion, but getting so many injuries? I mean, Neto, you mentioned, very good player, but he'd only relatively recently come back from injury. And it's, I mean, all sorts of clubs are having sort of nightmares as far as that's concerned. Newcastle is another. But at different times, different clubs are having a short of several players.
Well, I think it's been the knock-on effect from the World Cup has continued to have this effect up to and including this season, and that's the main issue, I think. And I think that the intensity has never been higher in terms of the way matches are played as well. It's one of those things. But I do think, you don't want to suffer in your league form. Go to the later stages of the FA Cup and Europa League where, you know, you're getting right towards the end of the season. You've still got no guarantee of winning anything, obviously, and it's going to get harder and harder. And if you let your form drop and you're down to 11th or 12th in the league into the last couple of weeks of the season, you're then needing to win a cup to get back into Europe. It would be nice, as you said, to qualify by rights with the league. We need to keep that campaign going. I think given the bad luck we've had with injuries and the heaviness of the schedule, that it probably is good at this stage, in one sense, a blessing in disguise, that we can focus now just on the two competitions rather than the three. But I really, really want us to get that first major trophy. And I do think the Europa League's going to be hard. You could argue that the FA Cup will be harder because you've got to deal with Manchester City in that tournament, plus Liverpool. Whereas this, you've got Liverpool and the next worst is probably Bayer Leverkusen or possibly Milan or West Ham even, you know. So it's feasible to win this one. It's going to be hard. But I would like us to certainly go strong on both fronts. And Peter, you know, you could call it doom-mongery. I don't think it is. It's just sensible predictions. Said, oh, we've got Everton and Fulham coming up in the league. Two games where we notoriously struggle. Dyche and Marco Silva teams, Fulham in particular, with or without Silva, we seem to struggle. And obviously, first part of that was not great. We managed to snatch a draw, but that's all we got. Fulham now, especially off the back of the Wolves game, we really need to bounce back, don't we, and get a result. I'm going to the game. I'm hoping we're going to get a result. And I think we can do. I think we've still got a reasonably decent starting 11 that we can put out, enough to win the game. But we're going to need to show a bit of savvy. I'm hoping Enciso, Barco, Adingra, and if Ferguson's fit, him as well, because he's well overdue a goal, can have an influence on the game. In terms of the other cup matches, I mean, it's all become painfully predictable now. Although Blackburn gave a bloody good account of themselves against Newcastle and were very unlucky, with two Brighton players in the team, they've got Andrew Moran in there, and Ayari came off the bench and did really, really well for them as well. He had a really good game. In the end, they lost on penalty. So Newcastle
and took a very good penalty as well.
He did, didn't he? Yeah. And yeah, I mean, so they're out, but it means Newcastle are through. Chelsea beat Leeds. Man City thrashed Luton. Haaland only got the 5 goals, so disappointing performance from him. And Manchester United squeezed past Forest. So you've now got a pretty dull-looking affair there. Obviously, you've got Leicester came through earlier in the week as well, so that's one other team. And, of course, you've got Coventry who have the game away at Wolves. So there's some teams to cheer on as underdogs, but it's starting to look a bit boring, that tournament.
I mean, one is just an interesting sort of statistical note. I can remember many years ago, in about 1959, 58, somewhere around there, that Huddersfield were playing Luton. I can't remember if Luton was still in the old Division 1 in those days or had just got demoted down to Division 2. But they were playing, and a young Scot called Dennis Law at the time was playing for Huddersfield. And the match got abandoned after about 63 or 67 minutes. I can't remember which it was, but it was that sort of length of time because of the state of the pitch. And poor Dennis had scored 6 goals by that time out of 7. 7 score to Huddersfield. And I just thought it was an interesting sort of footnote. I mean, it didn't count because the match was abandoned and they had to play it again, which was a shame. Otherwise, I don't think Dennis ever scored 6 goals again in any game after that. And so it would have been quite phenomenal. But the fact it was Luton who had somebody scoring 6 goals, albeit not counting, and then Haaland scoring 5 goals against them when they were a Premier League side. I mean, it's not as if they were, you know, an inferior league. And yeah, it was just one of those sort of quirks of history that happens. And I thought Manchester City should have left him on to allow him to perhaps get a 6th goal.
Well, if he had got a 6th goal, Raymond, is that 2 hat-tricks or is it just one very, very large hat-trick? Do you count those 2?
I would have thought it's 2 hat-tricks, actually.
Yeah, should be, shouldn't it? I think. Yeah. Not sure if I've had to deal with this question very often in the football world.
But actually, the first hat-trick was a real hat-trick in the sense it was three goals consecutively. And all five, he got the first five goals, so he actually, nobody else had scored at that stage. I mean, in terms of his, for Manchester City. So, no, it was good. I hope our friend Tony Brown will forgive me for saying this, but actually, I do think Chelsea have got a really jammy draw. I mean, they've ended up playing sort of Leeds in this last round. Now they've got Leicester, who won, and I'm sure they will expect to beat, since they're playing at home, I think, aren't they?
Hmm.
So they're anticipating doing that. So Chelsea can end up in the semi-final. One of Manchester United and Liverpool are going to get knocked out. So that's the, you know, that's
the other one might play one of Newcastle in the semi-final.
Man City can get knocked out. So yeah. The only other thing is going to be another Midlands side, a Wolves or Coventry. So there's a Midlands derby there.
Yeah.
So West Midlands derby there. So, you know, what's the odds of Chelsea win that they end up playing the winner of Wolves and Coventry?
Yeah. So, well, this is the other thing, because I was, apart from enjoying the result of the League Cup, I was also relieved because, of course, they could have taken away one of the league allocated European qualification spaces. Of course, the same spectre is now lingering in this tournament, because if possibly Man United, I doubt they'll miss out on European places. But if it is Chelsea or Leicester or Coventry, it's going to be quite, well, or even Newcastle, potentially, depending on where they finish in the table. They could be snatching one of the European places through the cup route, which would be rather annoying. So, yeah, I mean, I don't think they'll win it, Chelsea. I think Manchester City will probably win this tournament, particularly as Liverpool and Man U have to play each other. They might play each other in the semi-finals, who knows, which will be even more annoying from a Brighton point of view, because we would have missed out on, well, we would have missed those teams going at least to the final. But in terms of the League Cup, by the way, just one word on that, which I thought was fantastic. Not exactly impartial commentary, although he's got absolutely no affiliation with Liverpool, but it was amusing comment from Gary Neville on the commentary for the League Cup. He said Klopp's kids are basically giving Chelsea's billion-pound bottlers a lesson or something like that. I thought, oh, ouch. It was quite partial language, wasn't it, for a commentary?
Absolutely. But it's, I mean, it was true. I couldn't, you know, watching the extra time, it was sort of Liverpool's second team.
Yeah, a load of youth players in, partly by default because of injuries, but that's it. Raymond, we've got to wrap it up in a minute, but one thing actually just to finish off on, and we're talking about injuries, and we've had the ongoing situation. I think just to summarise what we've got at the moment, one thing we've been okay with is goalkeepers, but we've had Lamptey out. We've got him potentially back this weekend. We're hearing Veltman's now got a bit of an issue. Obviously, we've got March and Mittema out for the season, effectively, probably, and Joao as well for pretty much the same. We've got Gilmore suspended for another couple of games. We've got other people struggling with injuries on and off, like Welbeck and Ferguson have been. There's other people I'm sure I've missed out as well from the list. It's quite a bit of an injury issue, isn't it? Is this going to clear up? Do you think? I mean, hopefully it will. But we've got.
Well, it comes back. Let's hope those 3 weeks from after the 10th of March will provide the respite. There are a couple of other things that I wanted to raise.
Okay.
One of which is the news that Adam Hinshelwood and his team are leaving Worthing and going up to York City.
Yes, I was going to talk to Peter about that on the match day special on Saturday. But yes, we could talk about that now. Very sad from a Worthing point of view. Gutted for everyone at Worthing. He's done a brilliant job there. He's been there for several years. They've had to go through the process of winning the same division two or three times due to the COVID lockdowns and curtailment of seasons and all the rest of it. Finally did do so, got promoted in style, won the title, got into the playoffs in their first season up in the National South, which is the first time they've ever been at that level. And they were in second place. In fact, they'd just dropped down to third, after a back-to-back defeat. But they are firmly in the playoff places, unlikely to catch the leaders, but looking a pretty good bet for the playoffs, regardless of Adam leaving. But it must be a gutter for them to lose a player at that time. To lose a coach at that time in the season. He's gone up to York, which is the division above the National League Prem, where they are just teetering on the brink of the relegation zone. Yeah.
Yes. It would be ironic if Worthing went up and they came down.
Well, that's the risk, isn't it, with something like that? But I do think you'll probably turn it round for them. I think they're sitting a little bit slightly below where they probably should be, York. They're a good club, good fans, new stadium nowadays, and they've only got up into that division fairly recently, I think the last 2 to 3 years. And I think he'll do a good job there. It's an interesting appointment. Wish him the best of luck, because I've got no gripes with York City. And, you know, he's been at Worthing for a fair while, so he's paid his dues, as they say. I would have liked to seen him see if he could see out a promotion this year to give it another go to the end of the season. But obviously, York are looking for someone now for obvious reasons.
I mean, one of the reasons I'm sorry that it happens now, that he'll be that little bit further away from young Hinshelwood. Well, it's just his guidance on a day-to-day basis. And I know, obviously, Hinshelwood is not playing at the moment, and he's injured, and we don't know exactly if he'll come back before the end of the season or not. But certainly having his father around, you know, with all his experience of as a player and as a manager, a coach to guide. I mean, I'm sure he'll have the contact, but it won't be quite so constant. Yeah. And the other thing I wanted to raise was the fact that Chelsea have been ordered, and we don't know what the final figure will be, to pay £7.65 million for two young players that they got from us, one of which is Zach Sturgis, the left-back, who's currently on loan at Peterborough. And certainly, and I'm not sure how to pronounce it, but sort of something like Webber, who is, I think, a striker, who left and joined them at 14, is now 16, obviously highly thought of. His figure is, if it went to the full amount, would be 4.25 million of that 7.65, and of which the minimum figure is a million.
Takes the figure to something like 260 million they've given us in the last 2 to 3 years.
Sort of, you know, ridiculous amount of money, but it's still Chelsea actually going down to Brighton and saying, who's doing the good job at Brighton, and can we, you know, please have them?
Because of the age they're at, they basically snatched them away. They're not under contracts at that age, so it's only a matter of possible compensation. And we've obviously
the compensation. Yeah.
I mean, that is what transfer fees are. They're compensation payments in reality. That's the actual, the physical reality of it. So I suppose it's just a transfer fee in the end, I suppose, but an enforced one that I think Chelsea were quite sneakily trying to avoid paying. So I'm pleased we've got something from the moral point of view as well as the financial point of view.
Seem to be a proper strategy at Chelsea, other than trying to have, you know, go down the multiple club route, which I'm not quite sure what that means, in the sense that if it's in Europe, they're going to have problems because they can't have two teams competing in Europe owned by the same people.
Yeah.
But I'm sure the Americans will find some way around it. They'll say one of the owners of Chelsea financed one and the other financed the other or something, some sort of smoke and mirrors to get round it. It's a bit like Man City Group sort of owning things. And if Girona get into Europe, which they look like doing, even if it's not in the Champions League, which is a strong possibility, they'll have Man City and Girona up there. What happens then? Will they change the rules to suit that ownership? I don't know. I mean, there's a sort of inconsistency. And I don't know. I haven't had a chance to listen to the Everton podcast. My apologies yet for all of it. And I don't know if you mentioned about the change to the Everton points deduction.
Yes.
From 10 to 6. But yeah. I assume that means that when they come to review their second misdemeanor, that they will either that four or another six will be applied.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, I mean, it is a farce, isn't it? Because Man City, I understand why it's taking so long to go through that, because it's a vastly larger set of scenarios that they've got to work through. But it is causing a compromise on the integrity of the competition, because that's getting further and further away from when the misdemeanors occurred in City's case. And yet other teams are suffering this season or last season because of that. Obviously, that's not affecting the bottom of the table, so it's not the same thing. But, for example, Klopp's Liverpool would have a much better chance of winning the title this year. And obviously Arsenal as well. It would be, and there's rumours Arteta might possibly leave. Klopp definitely is leaving. Their last chance to do it, with Pep Guardiola still in situ. But if they've got the points deductions this season, that totally changes things. Otherwise, we've got a procession, haven't we? Because next season, they might end up with something like 20-point deduction, and they might still win the title. Who knows? Anyway, we better go. We better wrap it up. Final word, really, for me is just to say that the Roma tickets have gone on sale, and they have sold out, and they went into the second window. I think they went slightly into the third window as well, because a friend of the show, Chris, that's on our match day special squad, often managed to get one with a fairly low loyalty point level. So everyone that's got tickets, great news for them. Sorry for anyone that's missed out, but obviously keep your eye on the website, because certain tickets do come back on sale in dribs and drabs. So it's worth keeping an eye out if you haven't got a ticket yet and are planning to go. I know you're not going to that one, Raymond, but hopefully we'll meet up in Dublin for the final.
and just for those Solmet members who might be we have penciled in a room at the Duke of Sussex for the Roma away match, and we're trying to explore what the practicalities are of the TV. There should be no problems, but we're wanting to make sure there are no problems with the TV in the room. We've got a smaller room, the Cowdery one, but I know we'll go back if we're going to proceed with that. So for Sol members, yes, keep an eye on the Sol website, and Chris Jonas will be sending something through as and when we've resolved the matter of making sure we can get the TV. The reason I raised it is that TNT sometimes would give one a choice of matches. And therefore, if it's not on a dedicated, one of their dedicated channels, and it's one of the options, that might not be as easy. If it's one of the dedicated channels, no problem, we will be able to be there.
Yeah. Just for reference, Sol, for anyone that doesn't know what that is, a wider listenership, Seagulls over London, in case people are wondering. But yes, that's a good point raised, actually, for those in the London area and wanted to check it out. Keep an eye out for Seagulls over London publicity on that one. Raymond, thank you for joining me. And thanks also to Alistair and Nick for doing the Match Day special segment of this podcast. Until the next time, from me and the gent, it's goodbye. So, Raymond, stand or fall?
Up the Albion. And thank you very much, Russell.
Cheers. Sports Social Podcast Network.